Welcome to episode 11 of Open Source Underdogs, the podcast where we try to process all the incoming information about open source business models. Kostas Zoumas is the CEO and one of the founders of Data Artisans, a company who has commercialized Apache Flink. Flink enables developers to query big data in real time as it's being created. I'm recording this episode in Data Artisans' Berlin office. Kostas, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for being here.
Tell us about yourself. What's your background before you got involved with Data Artisans?
Sure. So my background is in computer science. So I studied computer science. I did a PhD in database systems. And then I moved to here in Berlin to do research on big data. And this is actually where the whole idea of Apache Flink and Data Artisans as a company came from, through the research we were doing at the university here in Berlin.
Keeping in mind that our audience is general interest / business, could you tell us a little bit about what stateful stream processing means, and specifically, what is Apache Flink?
Yeah, so I would say stateful stream processing is a fancy technical word for something super simple. And the whole premise is the following. If you think of data, the way that data is usually generated is continuously. So think of a click stream, or think of a click stream is basically capturing the clicks and the things that we do on websites or apps or whatever. Or think of sensors in the natural world measuring something and emitting data. Or think of financial transactions. So the way that data is born in the outset is always one event at a time. It is a continuous stream of events. That is what streaming means. And the main idea behind stream processing and stateful stream processing is to embrace this fact, and instead of trying to land the data first to some place and then process them and then do analytics on them, is to do the analytics while the data is flowing. So that is basically stateful stream processing. Stateful means that the computation itself has memory. So stateful is really just a word for doing more than something trivial, if you wish. So analytics on the data, building applications on these streams of data that do, for example, things like fraud detection. So, for example, we are working with banks that are getting a continuous stream of credit card transactions, and they're trying to classify whether a transaction is real or fraudulent. The state in this case refers to the model. It can be a machine learning model that determines whether the transaction is false or not. You can do things like real-time personalization and real-time recommendations. So, for example, as people are buying things in an e-commerce shop, or as people are looking at things, hovering over something, then you can continuously adjust the model that recommends new things to your customers. So one example is that we have been working together with Alibaba for quite a while, and they have built their search and recommender engine based on this concept of using the real-time information for personalization and recommendations. Other relevant work there is what Netflix has done with Apache Flink, taking into account what we are doing real-time on Netflix to personalize the website and recommend movies and series to you.
Tell me a little bit about Apache Flink.
It has a very interesting history. So I think the first line of code was written by my co-founder maybe 9-10 years ago. It started basically as a platform. That was when the whole idea of big data and you know, very distributed data processors like Hadoop was starting out. And the idea was to do that in real time. So the first massively distributed data processors that came out were very batch processing oriented, meaning that you would get a lot of data, you would process that, you would wait for a few hours, and then you would get an answer. And the idea was to do that continuously and do that in real time. So as I said, it started out as a research project here at the Technical University of Berlin. Then the team open sourced it, so we donated it to the Apache Software Foundation. That is when also we came up with the name Apache Flink. So fling is the German word for sort of agile or fast. And then a very fitting logo for this was the squirrel, which is very common in Germany. It's an animal that can move very fast. And from then on, it has been basically several years of the project growing massively in terms of community. So it is by now one of the biggest projects in big data, biggest open source projects in big data. It is being used in production by most of the tech companies in the world and also enterprise.
How did Data Artisans get started?
That, I would say, follows really the Flink history. So the team that built the project at the university, at some point we decided that the best way to accomplish the mission that we're having, which was to really bring the technology out in the world and have everybody use it, this was best accomplished by starting a company rather by doing academic research. So when we started Data Artisans about 4 years ago, we had a very simple goal, which was to make it possible for everyone to use stream processing with Apache Flink.
It seems like the funding and the company almost got started at the same time. How did that happen?
I would say that clearly from the beginning, we were always positioned as a company based on the open source. So what we had was a great technology, a great open source community. This is a model that has been proven to some extent from some companies. The past to some other extent, it is still being proven. There are a lot of companies that follow this model. So have an open source foundation and build the business based on that. So this has always been our premise. Yeah. And we were always looking for investors that would subscribe to this sort of more long-term view.
How do you decide which features go into Apache Flink and which features become Data Artisan features?
So at Data Artisans, we have always been following a very long-term approach. So in the first few years of the company, we were basically doing everything in open source, 100% in open source. Monetization was not the focus. The focus of the company was to grow the open source community, to help the open source community. We were doing a lot of work together with companies that use Flink with a goal of adoption. At some point, this worked out for us. So at this point, Flink is the engine of choice for every company that wants to do any kind of serious stream processing. This was the point that also as Data Artisans, we decided to sort of move on to the next step, which is to build a business and monetize the business. And the way we're doing that is what people refer to as the open core model. So we have a product, it's called the Data Artisans Platform, that encapsulates Apache Flink and also adds additional features on top of that. And we offer that together with enterprise support. There have been two features that we have added on top of Apache Flink that are contained in our product. The first one we released a bit over a year ago. And that is a way to basically manage the deployment of stream processing applications in production. So it makes it easy for enterprises to operationalize Apache Flink. So the idea there is that you should be able to experiment quite a bit with the open source, but then if you're an enterprise that needs additional help and additional tools to bring it into production, to connect it with all the other infrastructure you have, like logging, metrics, etc., and to really build an internal platform to use, that is where our offering kicks in. And then the second feature that is part of the Data Artisans platform we released in September, that's called the Data Artisans Streaming Ledger, and it is effectively a way to do ACID transactions on streaming data. To your question, how do we decide whether something is open source or closed source? I think it's a fine balance. We're always taking the long view. We are not maintaining an internal version of Flink. We are shipping standard Apache Flink. At the same time, we appreciate, and I think by now open source communities appreciate as well, that a healthy business behind the open source framework is something that is also good for the development of the project. So really the value proposition is that you get a turnkey solution. You don't have to build stuff around the edges yourself, but you get a turnkey solution that has been built by the creators of Flink, has been tested by us, is supported by us, and we can basically help you on your journey to adopt, productionize, and use stably Apache Flink in production.
So how do you license that? Is there a different license for, let's say, the non-core features?
So Apache Flink is Apache licensed, obviously. Our product is as a whole closed source, so it comes with a license. And we offer that in basically two editions. One we call the Stream Edition, which contains Apache Flink, Application Manager, and a few other components. And then the other one also contains the Streaming Ledger, the ability to do AC transactions. And we call that the River Edition.
Are there any other revenue streams like services or trainings or...
Yeah, so we do offer services to our customers, and we also have training for Apache Flink, which we do both in the form of on-site training to customers, and also recently we organize public trainings in several cities.
But in terms of a percentage of revenue, licenses, is it more than 90%?
We're pretty focused on licenses as a company. This is, I think, a better way to make revenue, selling a product rather than selling time. And it scales much better.
So who are the current customers? Do you segment them in any way, for example, by sector or by functional application?
The product is very horizontal. Obviously, the open source community is completely global, and I would not say it's segmented in any way. So we have use cases from all industries. As a business, we see a lot of early commercial adoption in the financial services sector, so investment banking, insurance companies, and so on. That's not to say that these are the only customers we serve, but we do see a good amount of commercial uptake.
Are those larger cloud companies contributing? Are they buying support, or are they contributing in other ways to the project or to Data Artisans?
So Netflix is a user of the open source framework. Same goes for companies like Uber, Lyft, the large new tech companies. So in tech companies, they usually have a different mentality, which makes sense for them, which is to hire talent and build a lot of things internally. But they do contribute in other very, very meaningful ways to the open source community. For example, specifically with Netflix, built largely on AWS, and they had tested Flink on AWS in a scale that pretty much nobody else has. So they really made Flink extremely stable at that scale, AWS, which is a benefit to every other potential user or Data Artisans customer that wants to run on AWS.
You might have been following some of the license changes by other open source companies to prevent monetization of the open source by large cloud providers in a way where they're not contributing their fair share to the open source. Are you concerned that an Amazon or a Google might take Apache Flink and build the features that you consider enterprise and compete with you?
I mean, this is definitely something that might happen as Flink is getting more and more popular. Amazon and Google are already have offerings around Apache Flink in their free services, so Amazon EMR. Does this concern me? Yes, it concerns me. I would very much like to be in a world where all of these players would play strategically and contribute back to the open source community. However, I take an optimistic approach to this. So this also proves the popularity of the platform. We are in a market that is growing every day. So we see completely new applications coming in every day. So I'm less concerned right now about how we're going to slice the pie, but how everyone in the industry is going to work together to bring the message out, the message about streaming data, and to make the pie even larger. It's just a market that is growing very, very fast.
So where do you think you need to go from here? What new products and services are in the planning phases?
I think we're just in the beginning. We see stream processing is a new paradigm for data computation. It just changes the way that you look at data. Instead of landing the data somewhere and then firing a query and then getting an answer, you have a query that is running always. And as data is coming in, you always have the most updated answer. And we just see more and more and more applications coming in every day. When we were starting out, the main use case for streaming data was to do real-time analytics, and usually to kind of do an approximation, like approximate analytics in real time while you wait for the correct answer to come up later. Then we saw a lot of applications that we would classify more as applications rather than as analytics. Things like the fraud systems that I mentioned before, or billing systems, things like that. So actually running the business, not measuring what is going on. With the new functionality that we brought in our product, the streaming ledger, we are now able to cover use cases that before could only be covered with relational database systems, use case and applications that need async transactions. We see a lot of movement in the Flink community trying to bridge the gap between batch processing and stream processing. Batch processing is really a subset of stream processing. A batch computation is a stream that just so happens to have a beginning and an end. So you can do that as well. So we just see new and new applications coming in every day. And the way we're approaching this is that we are trying to create the tools to make this accessible to the enterprise. So every company that, let's say, does not have the ability that sort of Netflix or Uber have to hire dedicated developers and build everything on their own, we're positioning ourselves as being the vendor that can enable them to be at the same place that Uber, Netflix, and Alibaba is, but without having to roll their own system. So we're learning from the community for our products.
What's the range of different customer relationships you have? So some customers, maybe you have a very direct support relationship. Some customers, maybe they never call you. So what's sort of the range of customer interactions that you have?
Right now, in the state that we are in our journey, in our business, we strive to have a direct relationship with every customer. So everything we do is direct sales, or most that we do is direct. And we strive to have a very direct and a very deep relationship with a customer, working together with their engineering teams, like really being a partner for them.
How do customers find you?
The open source platform is famous. That's where people find us from. It's all inbound. We don't cold call anyone. And from that point on, for us, it's typical enterprise sales, because we work with very large enterprises, large deployments, typical enterprise sales process.
Pricing is really a challenge for everybody in every industry. Can you talk a little bit about what were some of the challenges around pricing?
As you say, it's hard. First of all, I think pricing works when it captures utility. So the customer must be happy to pay more and they get a lot more value out of it. So I think this is one parameter. Then the other parameter is keeping it simple, because nobody wants to, to solve a differential equation to figure out the price. Balancing these two is always an art. And I'm not going to say that we have done something completely innovative or different there.
Have you had to tweak the offering a little bit since you got started? Has it been trial and error?
As always, yes. As always, we had to do that. I think there's no other way. You have to communicate with the market, see what the customer wants, see what resonates with the customer, and adapt.
Isn't that tricky in enterprise sales, where there's a longer sales process and it's not like you can do A/B testing and, sell your data artisans platform for one price and sell it for another price and see. What's the time frame for you making those types of pivots?
It is. And I don't want to say we ended up doing any kind of pivot. It was our initial thesis there was well received. We had to do minor tweaks. We also know the way that this kind of enterprise customer products are priced in the market. It's pretty uniform. Most of the companies follow very similar, broadly, concepts. So there's also that experience to tap into. And I think this is also valuable, because from a procurement department, what they want to see is something that they have seen before and understand, and keeps the process simple rather than a fancy new idea that someone thought of.
Can you talk a little bit about channels? I know that Data Artisans is still pretty new, but have channel partners played a role, and where do you see the partner program going?
I'm a big, big fan of being focused. And for me, building a company has a lot to do about saying a lot of no's and making a few bets. So when we started out the company, we focused 100% on open source. At the time, that was an unpopular choice for many who were telling me, you have to build a business. It's not about the open source. But if you try to do too many things at the same time, you end up being kind of medium good at many things, and kind of nobody wants that. So for me, the first challenge was to achieve critical mass in the open source community. The next sort of step in the journey that we're going right now is to prove it artisans as a business. And then after that comes scaling. So right now we're working with a number of partners, but in an exploratory way. And when it makes sense to get a direct customer. Pretty soon we will start making a more formal partner program, but we haven't done this yet.
How do you distinguish your offering from the competitors?
For us, what is core to us is that we basically are the people that created Apache Flink originally. Internally in the company, we are the experts on the framework. We are the ones that can support the customers best. And we are really, by participating in the open source community and by working together with all of these large tech companies that are using Flink, even if they're not our customers, we're learning so much and we're bringing all of this institutional knowledge to our customers. So we're really the absolute experts on Apache Flink. There are, of course, other alternative frameworks from Apache Flink, and they are distinguished by, if you really look at the market today, Flink is ahead of its competitors for stream processing by a number of years in development, both in terms of the feature set and the functionality that you find, but also in terms of to how much extent has the framework been tested and hardened at a very large scale.
Where do you see data artisans in 10 years?
The market is growing very, very fast. This is a new paradigm for data. Companies are realizing the benefits that embracing this paradigm can give to them, but I think we're really in the early days of the market.
So you've had quite the experience building an open source community and an open source company. What do you think are the challenges facing new founders of open source companies?
A lot of companies that were started before we started Artisans had done a lot of the groundwork. For example, the Hadoop companies, Cloudera and so on. And they had proven to the market and they had convinced the market that open source is a good thing. So, we as Artisans never had the challenge to convince a bank that open source is a bad thing. That's a huge step. I also think that developer communities are also becoming a lot more business savvy. Developer communities are also realizing that having a financially successful business backing up the open source project just means better results for the open source project. So I think for us as data artisans and for newer founders, a lot of work has been done, but it doesn't mean that this has been proven. There are very few companies in the world that have successfully IPO'd and have been public for a while or have been, you know, financially successful with open source. But a lot of this road, I think, has been paved. I think one challenge for the newer founders is the licensing challenge that you mentioned before. So basically, how can you avoid sort of parasitic behavior in the community? So companies just, you know, grabbing the open source, offering it commercially, but not contributing anything back. I think this is an active discussion right now in the open source community. And I mean, I'm interested to see how it goes from an academic point of view more, because for us, we are part of the Apache Software Foundation. Flink is Apache licensed and we'll stay like that. But the movement in this space, I think for me is interesting.
Any tips about the VC process and working with VCs that might be helpful to other entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think this is a challenge in every company. I don't think this is particular to open source companies. I'm not going to pretend that I'm the one that is at the position to give advice at this point. But even if it kind of sounds like a platitude, what I have seen is that the person matters a lot. So the particular partner that you work with is paramount and perhaps even more important than the firm.
So one last question. Do you have any personal advice for the entrepreneur person who is about to start a company?
It's hard. I think, first of all, what I have seen is that the motivation should not be the money. I have not met any successful entrepreneur who was motivated by money. And to do all the hard work and stay up all night and to go through all the stress, you really need to believe in your mission and refine your mission. And then the other thing I learned from others that came before me and mentored me was exactly the importance of being focused. So when you are when you're starting a company and you're building a company, it's not obvious what you have to do, especially for me that it's my first time doing that. So it's never obvious what you have to do. And you know, you see all of these things and you always think, hey, I should be doing a little bit of that. Hey, I should also be going to that conference. And that conference also looks good. Or, you know, maybe we should be building a product now and targeting that market because, oh, there's another company that's coming in and targeting that market. So you can very easily get lost. What I think has proven very, very useful for me is the importance of focus. So the definition of a startup is limited resources and maximizing the impact with these resources. So the question should not be what is the possible spectrum of things that we can do, but what are the 1, 2, 3 maximum things that we can do to maximize our impact in this world with our resources right now. So focus on one thing and become extremely good at this. This is advice that I had gotten and it has served me very well.
Kostas, thanks so much for your candorous responses and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Special thanks to the Data Artisans team for reaching out to us. Transcription and episode audio can be found on opensourceunderdogs.com. Music from Broke for Free, Chris Zabriskie, and Lee Rosevier. Production assistance and transcription by Natalie Lau. Operational support from William Lau. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @FossPodcast. That's FOSS Podcast. We have a packed schedule for 2019. Next time we'll be talking with Sean Porter, founder of Sensu. He has some great insights, so don't miss it. Until then, thanks for listening.